mein auf den Super Knast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 437. I'm Adam, and no way I'm going to be able to give you a quote because I've been exceptionally busy this week, and this is why the podcast is rather late. And here's Kirby Bartlett Sloane.
I shall send whoever calls away, my lord.
And Mary Lang.
I'm going with Alien Parasite.
Right, so yes, this week...
Mary. Yeah, Mary. I think you should have used, may I just say, you're quite lovely in a crisis or something like that.
Right. I will interject because obviously we're recording considerably later because I've just been filming a stage show which only finished, about just over half an hour ago maybe, or got home half an hour ago. Anyway, it's just delayed me, which means I haven't been able to watch Doctor Who we're going to be reviewing next week, but it'll be under the same circumstances because we've got the show for the other side of the school that we did. So it's almost like a deja vu situation next week. Same situation. It will probably be around this time, maybe a bit earlier, because I think that particular teacher's a bit more organised. I don't know. We'll see how I get on. But it was a three-hour show, and yesterday's shows were 3 hours. So as Izzy and Deb started filming at 11 a.m., I joined them after my shift at work and did this show we just had. So that's a lot of filming. So I've just done that. I've rushed in to throw the show together. Under normal circumstances, I wouldn't record, but because obviously Doctor Who's on at the moment, we're in that situation where we almost have to record as we are. So thank you, Mary and Kirby, for hanging around to join me on the show this week. This week, of course, we're talking about The Haunting of Villa Diodati, or however you want to pronounce it.
Why did they even have to title it that? Why not just The Haunting of the Villa?
Yeah. I think that looks quite romantic, Villa Diodati. There must be some sort of historic reference.
That is the name of the house that this whole thing really happened. Without
they didn't really have to say it.
No, maybe not, but yeah. I don't mind. It doesn't bother me. But like I say, just so as listeners aren't a bit confused by the way this the particular review is going to... it is a review, isn't it? Is going to pan out. We are a bit short of time because it's quite late, and especially the fact the two recording devices I use to record the stage shows I've just been filming have got very limited space on them, and I have to get the show done before they run out. So there we go.
Hey, maybe we could keep it under 20 megabytes.
No, that's not going to happen. But ideally, yes. Right then, so it begins in June 1816 in Lake Geneva, which is where the drone shot, I presume it's a computer drone shot, takes us to a lady by a rainy window carrying a little baby looking out into the raininess. And there's a collection of people in there, which we later find being Mary Shelley, Lord Byron, Mary Shelley's husband, and some other people in a beautifully lit house, because obviously it's lit by candles. They've done a good job on that. They start, I think they're talking about ghost stories, aren't they? Yes.
We've seen this house before in Doctor Who several times.
Have we? Is it your house?
The interior happens to be Pete Tyler's mansion.
Was it?
And it was also used in... The Muppets Take Manhattan,
Manhattan. Yes, that famous Doctor Who story, Muppets Take Manhattan. Anyway, back to the story. So I'm going to try and paraphrase as best as I can, especially as my computer is trying to reject Adobe. What's it called again? Creative Cloud at the moment, like it does every time I switch it on, and you just have to repair it and it comes back on again. I pay money for Adobe Creative Cloud. It's quite a lot of money, and I'm really disappointed that Adobe don't ever sort it out with a happy sort of representation from the customer service department. Anyway, moving on. Right then, so... The whole thing stopped. Right, yeah, so basically they're talking ghost stories in this spooky house. And there's a bit of a storm going on as well, hence the flashing and banging and stuff. And there's some quite spooky characters, especially the butler.
I love the butler.
He's very lurch-like.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
And his eye rolling was tremendous.
Yeah. Anyway, so and then we have the title sequence, because obviously we've introduced the characters for this story. And then at the door, the Doctor and her sidekicks turn up, looking quite amusing. Especially, what's her name again? Oh, God. Reese would get cross. I best remember her name, because I keep forgetting who she is. We've got to
Yaz.
Yaz. Ryan. Yaz. That's the forgettable one, isn't it?
Lori Nix made a comment someplace about that bonnet. It's
funny, God! Yeah, I'm glad she sheds it early.
looks like the bonnet from a Wii party game. I think where the baby, when you have to rock the baby to sleep. Oh, you know what I'm talking about then. Yeah, so Yaz, I must remember that. Isn't it bad we're getting to a second series that has Yaz as a companion, the name still doesn't roll off my tongue as if I should know it by now, but she
doesn't make that much of an impression.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't dislike her that to that degree, but it's really bad that she hasn't made enough of an impression on me that the name isn't sort of etched into my brain.
Yeah, like I can never remember Ryan's name. Again, he's not terribly impressive, so.
Anyway, is it I can't speak all of a sudden. She shows the psychic thing and it doesn't work. The psychic paper,
yeah.
And it doesn't work.
And for some reason, it doesn't seem to work on historical figures, because Shakespeare couldn't see anything either.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, glad they've kept that consistent. All right, so they come into the house and just make friends with everybody in there, and the Doctor gets a bit excited, because obviously it's Lord Byron and it's Mary Shelley, and they do some rather cool dancing as well. Just to
yeah, the dancing was funny.
And didn't the actor that looked, I can't remember, it was a Doctor, didn't he look a little bit like the Master?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you, Mary. I thought you did. I thought maybe he was like a younger version. That would have worked.
Yeah, that was the first thought that hit me when I saw him.
Anyway, the nanny who's looking after the baby is sort of starts getting a bit spooked and gets some funny camera angles. And then there's all sorts of spooky feelings going on in the house as well, because they're trying to create this claustrophobic, which they do rather well. Claustrophobic. And that's right, because Graham goes off to try and find the toilet. And of course, he keeps on. And I think this has started slightly earlier than I'm talking about, where it was almost like a Castrovalva situation. Yes. He's going around to find himself in the same place.
Yeah, he's doing the Castrovalva thing within like 8 minutes.
Yeah. So he goes up the steps and then he comes through another door. I really love that. It's really cool. I know it's copying Castrovalva a little bit, but I still quite like the way they worked it into the story.
I had no problem with it copying Castrovalva.
Nor did I, no. Anyway, so we have these usual current Doctor Who scenes where we have a character having a one-on-one with another character. But when Yaz is talking to the young lady, a ghost appears. Very spooky. Yes, Kirby?
Not only are they having a one-on-one conversation, but they lean against the wall and sit down on the floor. Which seems to happen quite a bit.
Oh, yeah, it does. Thank you. I wish I'd spotted that part of that. I must admit, it's just what they do now, but it is a bit... Oh, here we go. We're waiting for the one-on-one conversation. Now we have to wait for the one-on-one conversation where they're going to be sitting on the floor. Doesn't bother me amazingly, but it's a bit sort of, okay, we're doing that again. Oh, okay, they're doing that again, you know. But it's what they do in lots of dramas, so it's not just Doctor Who, so I can't really pick on...
But I don't think they did it at that time. I don't think there was very much floor-sitting.
No, not necessarily floor sitting, but I mean, if you look at a lot of the current dramas on television, even Lock and Key, there are, and Picard and stuff like that, they do these one-on-one scenes, not necessarily sitting on the floor, but where they have these little intimate conversations. But they stand out a little bit at the moment because of the irritating, quiet background noise, music, that's always playing as it. Anyway, there's
Master?
A ghost. Nearly got there, yes?
One thing with this ghost sighting, when Yaz and is this Mary Shelley or is this Claire that she's
Claire,
with?
I think it's Claire.
It's Claire. Yes. They're sitting on the floor there and they see the ghost for a split second. That's the only time that anyone other than Graham sees one of the quote ghosts. Because everybody else is seeing Shelley as he's out of phase.
So that is Shelley. They see Shelley, don't they? Out of phase. It's like a hooded, hooded
figure. Yeah, they see Shelley out of phase later.
Oh.
But if you look very carefully at that flash ghost when they're sitting on the floor, that's the maid.
Okay. Anyway, so, Byron flirts with the doctor. The other doctor play. Oh yeah, but Ryan then shows that he can play something on the. Oh yeah, chopsticks is it on the piano? With which really impresses Mary Shelley. Then Graham comes back into the room and moaning still needs a wee, and we see a little shot of the chamber pot. I remember chamber pots. Well, we had a chamber pot in one of the houses I stayed at when I was a child. And it was in quite a spooky house when I first moved into it, so it actually did come in quite handy. Just saying. Also, when I was sick, it was quite handy to throw up into.
Moved to Wales?
Yeah, it was. Oh, what a coincidence.
And this house is in Wales, even though it's in Lake Geneva, it's in Wales.
Kirby, there's a lot of houses in Wales. So, the next scene is this, what initially I thought was a spider walking across the floor, but it's actually a hand, isn't it? Like a skeletal hand.
I thought it was a spider.
Yeah, which then grabs Ryan by the throat. But it's easily disposed of. The butler smashes it, and the doctor tastes it.
Yum. Tastes a bit of umami.
Yeah. And I'm just moving it forward a bit. So, yeah, so we embark on lots of spooky stuff, and they find a skull and some costumes and a box, and within the box are some bones. And whose bones are they, Kirby?
A soldier from some battle or another.
Yes. And
I was laughing over Byron saying that the doctor is from someplace much, much stranger, the North.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Dr. Polidori who said that, yes.
Yeah, the North.
Then Graham is he's sort of reading by the fire, and there's couple of weird characters to show up. Some nurse-looking person and a young girl.
Those are the real ghosts.
Yes.
But they give him food.
Are they ghosts? Real ghosts?
They're real ghosts. Wow. They're not.
The doctor kind of implies, the doctor says ghosts don't exist, but then she says maybe they do.
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. I like that. I didn't pick up on that, sorry. Anyway, so there's lots of walking around the house, carrying candles and being spooked out. And
they must have gotten quite tired of going up and down those stairs.
Yeah.
Well, no, not up and down, always down.
Anyway, so
Mary Shelley goes up to try and get to William.
Then Ryan and his little team of girls spot the ghost. The nurse tries to get the baby, but the baby appears to have disappeared.
More than disappeared, there's that skull and everything there.
Yeah. And then suddenly the doctor, the other doctor, the curly, dark-haired doctor, who looks a bit like
Dr.
the master.
Dr. Polidori.
Yeah. Seems to be a bit possessed, starts walking around, like he's sleepwalking.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And
through walls.
Yeah, he goes through a wall. It was a bit like Rent-A-Ghost. It was fantastic. I love that. But then, of course, the doctor realises it's some sort of perception filter, doesn't she? The walls are not actually there, and tries to get everybody to concentrate and see what was actually going on. I love the effect when the wall starts sort of wobbling when there's something coming through it, and as it does when the other doctor walks through it. And the doctor then starts. It's very awkward when we've got two characters called Doctor in the same story.
But one of them is Mrs. Doctor.
That was brilliant, wasn't it, Mrs. Doctor?
Yeah, I like that, Mrs. Doctor.
Yeah. So she's her little cogs in her brain are starting to go, trying to work out what's going on. And it was quite spooky when they went to the crib, and inside the crib was that skeleton, as you mentioned, Mary. The doctor then attempts to go outside. And can't get out there, and they're all stuck in a room again. A spooky room, and someone's phone's ringing, and it's raining. Hang on, just moving forward a bit. And outside, they see this sort of lit, like a shining man through the window. Yes? Oh, you're agreeing with me. That's good. It's like it's there, and then it isn't. And then it gets struck by lightning.
Well, and when I first saw the shining man, I thought, you know, back to those creatures from, what is it, the Babbage thing.
Oh, my.
Deal or no deal?
I don't know what you mean, deal or no deal.
It's a old game show that I was on once as an audience member.
Single man quit.
Hey, someone's getting a call.
Somebody trying to call me, and I'm trying to stop them.
We could always answer it and say, excuse me, I'm very busy at the moment.
Golly.
Don't get this on any other podcast.
Yeah, it did. Like the shining creatures from the two-part winter season. Yeah.
Anyway, but it turns out to be a rather beautifully designed, nearly complete Cyberman.
He's got Cyberman? Pieces of Master.
Pieces of Master. Oh, that's where the Master got.
Master. He's got pieces of three different Cybermen designs on him. Right. And then he's got stuff we've never seen on a Cyberman before.
Anyway. But he's really cool. He's struggling to kill things because he's low on power. Because he hasn't been struck by lightning yet, just like I point out. Sorry, I got that bit wrong. But it does have enough energy to throttle the butler to death.
Aw, poor Fletcher.
Yeah, anyway, so he goes around and he finds the baby. And you think, there we go, end of baby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. At this point, we thought that the person within the cyber costume was, in fact, Shelley. Because we're thinking, well, what reason would it not kill the baby? And then we think, oh, is the baby the timeless child? You know, and all these things are coming into our minds. Anyway, obviously, we knew this was the alleged lone Cyberman, or is it? Anyway, so
yeah, that's what I'm wondering. That even though it is a lone Cyberman, I don't think it's the one that Jack was referring to. But who knows?
It may not be. Anyway,
they find out different.
The Cyberman manages to absorb a lightning strike, and then they all get transported back to 1986. Oh, sorry, no, that's Back to the Future, isn't it? Sorry, I got confused. he's really pleased because he's sort of got full strength back. Oh, yeah, down in the cellar is Shelley.
Out in the street.
What?
Nothing.
And lots and lots of writing and stuff. I have missed a few bits and bobs. I seem to remember there being lots of scribbles and writing and things on the walls. And it's funny that when they find, is it Shelley they find downstairs? It looks a bit like Prince Charming. And then they find, of course, the baby's not been killed, and the doctor's curious as to why. And then she does something. I'm moving forward a bit further, but she does something that makes the cyber man either go out of phase or go somewhere else. I can't remember what she did now. Tell me.
The Cyberium in Shelley is still trying to protect.
That's that metal stuff. It almost quick metal, isn't it? That's almost like a living metal, which, and that's what the Cyberman was after, wasn't it?
That's what's been making the house all Castrovalva and stuff.
But yeah, so she cleverly sends him away. But it's still inside Shelley. I'm sure that's supposed to have some impact on everything. But there's a little bit of a flash backwards and forwards to sort of show what happened to Shelley. I think he finds this metal, doesn't he, floating around somewhere and just touches it and it goes into his bloodstream.
Yeah, he finds it in Lake Geneva.
Yes. I said he found it somewhere.
In the lake.
I said he found it somewhere. I've only seen this story once. I have been busy, you know.
Oh, I've seen it three times so far.
So I'm moving forward and moving forward still. Still moving forward because I've already covered the bits we're just talking about now. So once the doctors use the Sarah, what do you call it, to send the Cybermen away, all the lighting turns all nice and colourful, and they go into the forest, and off goes everybody in the TARDIS and warp.
It's implied that by the Doctor that the reason that year was without a summer was not because of the volcanic eruption, but because of this whole thing occurring.
Yeah, because it all cleans up as soon as
Anyway, so this story, I do apologise, everyone, when we couldn't cover it in the usual way, and I think we have to congratulate ourselves, or especially me and Mary, that we actually managed to get through it that quick with Kirby on the show, because this is how quick we normally cover it when Kirby isn't on the show. So I think we deserve a ding, Mary.
There we go.
So, yeah. This story actually is very good. I've really quite enjoyed it as a standalone Doctor Who story, which has references to previously mentioned characters. It was quite spooky. It was interesting. I loved the Cyberman, the way they've done that. It was very engaging and good fun. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was a good little fun horror story. Probably one of the better ones. I'd rate this as the probably third best story of the series so far. What did you think of it, Kirby?
Just like this is now happening a lot with this season series. The first time I watched it, I didn't like it.
Oh.
I watched it again, and I loved it.
Okay.
Maybe it's Chibnall's way of handling things, but maybe it's confusing at first or something. And I didn't like the supernatural elements at first, but then watching it again, okay, that's fine. And we've had supernatural elements before. I love the atmosphere and the Castor Valvinus.
I suspect you do like the atmosphere. It's set on Earth, and obviously this is an atmosphere that's quite useful to.
And I just recently, a few months ago, I recently recorded a podcast where we discussed Frankenstein.
Yes.
So a lot of this was very familiar to me anyway, because it's over on the Earth Station 1 podcast, if you want to go and listen to it a few months ago. So that influenced how I saw this and everything. And it's just, I want to hear from Mary how she's going to reconcile this with Big Finish.
Because going to listen to Mary in a minute, so you're very impatient, aren't you?
The Doctor's been here the same night before. So anyway, I liked it very much.
Marvellous. Okay. Yeah. All right then. Okay. Before we move on to Mary, we have Lillian Robin saying, "There you are." I don't know if there was any sarcasm in that particular post, but I think there probably was. We do really need a sarcasm emoji. And then she says, "Bless you, dear, for showing up and casting after a long day." See, I can't even read. It's terrible. And then Ian Kirk says, "Butler? Pedantic." He says he is a valet. Pedantic. Close brackets. Whatever. Yeah, I'm going to say butler.
Actually, he says valet.
Is it valet? Okay. Right, and so moving on. Here we go, everybody. Prepare yourselves. Slowly. Mary, what did you think of it?
Well, I'm actually of two minds of this story. When it started, and for a good half to two-thirds of it, I'm kind of tapping my fingers going, okay, we're doing another historical, and everybody, you know, it's a nice little ghost story, but, you know, like, what is the point of all this? Because a lot of it just seemed to be time-wasting, you know, the chopsticks, the repetitive going up and down stairs and all that. It just seemed like, okay, we're just kind of marking time till we get to the good episodes, which are the two, which make up the, you know, the finale. And then the Cyberman shows up. And then everything changes. It's like, oh, okay, here's the real story. And that whole stuff with the Siberium and the Cybermen and all, you know, suddenly it just became a whole different Doctor Who story, which then I was really enjoying. So then when I watched it the second time, I thought, you know, okay, I'm going to look for maybe there's hints somewhere along the way that I should have paid attention to. But no, it just still seems to come across as just a kind of a time-wasting, nice little historical ghost story right up until the Cyberman shows up again. So I thought, this is like two different stories. So I don't know what the point of the, you know, historical setting or all that, you know, time spent playing around in that house with the ghosts, except, you know, we find out it's a defense mechanism, but I don't know. I think it could have been handled in a little more interesting way, but still, you know, but I come away from it feeling pretty good about this story just because, okay, ooh, here's the lone Cyberman, and she gives it what it wants, which of course she's not supposed to do. So it's like, okay, here we go. You know, we're going to be rolling from here. So so that's what I mean. Two minds. It's two different stories.
That's quite positive, Mary.
By reconciling with Big Finish, do you mean the Mary Shelley stories?
Yes.
Okay. Well, there's very little relationship between those stories and this one.
Well, yeah. Actually, yes, because the first one takes place at this exact same night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which one really happened? Yeah. Which one is canon?
Well, I can tell you which
wobbly,
one.
Timey, wimey. Sorry, I talked over that bit. Big problem.
That's
it. Oh, is that it?
I just, you know, wanted to say the first half to two thirds I didn't enjoy, but once the Cybermen showed up, then I was having a good time. So.
Well done. Okay, I suppose we could move on to feedback. I don't know if anything came through your request at all.
Oh, yes.
You better get on with that then.
Excuse me?
You better get on with that then.
Okay. Let's see. Start with Aaron.
Yes.
Who says, my thoughts as a blind person. Spoilers, I absolutely love the audio design for the Lone Cyberman, like the 2005 version, but slightly more menacing. Also, props to the sound department and the audio description people, whoever they are, because there was a part where the Cyberman was talking, and the audio description then said, in the bedroom, just as it cut to the room, and you could hear the Cyberman's voice booming and echoing as if it was in another room. I'm so glad they took this approach. It's just that little bit scarier without being overly so. And then I added a description after that to the picture I used that I post, and he liked that. Robert Haynes says, I have the opposite problem to you. I'm quite deaf, and so I have to really pay attention when watching. Often I don't have the subtitles either, which makes it worse. Even with the volume turned up, it's hard to hear properly, especially when people speak fast or they have too much intrusive music. Also, being quite hot here in Australia, we have fans going to try and cool us down, which, of course, makes so much noise as well, making it even more difficult.
If it's Doctor Who fans, you're never going to get cooled down because you never can please them all. Oh, I see. Fans, as in... Right, carry on, Kirby.
Jeff Waddle says, I wish I hadn't seen the David Tennant era, to all which right. Laurie posted a little
cheeky
animation
monkey.
Of Cheeky Monkey.
Yeah.
Let's see. Laurie says, unfortunately, I will be working during the live feed.
Oh, yes.
Although she's watching, by the way. But because of subject matter and the fact that I got to view this in a convention hall with 1,000-plus cheering Whovians last Sunday, this episode is now my favorite of the series. Afterwards, I discussed the romantics with a friend who is a bit of a scholar on Brian and crew. As dignified enthusiasts over post-con cocktails, it boiled down to who was the hotter dude. My English professor friend was irritated that they had portrayed Byron as a coward when he was a war hero in real life, and that the actor wasn't more attractive in comparison to the other two. We were both happy that Dr. Pauly was cast as an attractive young man rather than how he was portrayed in the film Gothic. I got the last laugh, though, due to the fact that Shelley, who I favor over Byron, was a superfine Smeagol. That is my dirty old lady report. I've viewed it three times in total, and there's very little I can fault. It was a perfect mix of early Gothic novel, laudanum-induced nightmare, mystery, chiller, comedy, pseudo-historical, sci-fi story for me. certainly the most atmospheric we've seen so far. Not being a sunshine and lollipop sort of girl, I like how stuff has just gotten real and grim for the Doctor and her team. That dressing down speech about team structure was amazing. Yes, it was. Save the poet, save the universe is definitely going on a Galley One ribbon next year. Lastly, the ultimate takeaway question. Wouldn't Ghost be so much cooler if they served tea sandwiches like Grams did?
Yeah.
And Laurie, this is where Laurie says, P.S., nothing scarier than Yaz in that bonnet. Oh, Jeff dear. Said faultless from start to finish.
Oh, well done, Jeff. We won't say it's faultless, but it is very good.
Yeah, Jeff loves this whole season.
Yeah.
Yes, he does.
Which I quite like the fact that he likes it, to be fair.
And since I had made in the request for feedback, I specifically pointed out to Lillian that we were going to be running late. And she responds, okay, I'll wait patiently for the live stream and won't complain. And then it's funny because it was Lori who complained. Aaron says, well, if you take it as a historic episode, it completely falls apart as it's not accurate at all. But as a piece of sci-fi, it works.
Yep.
Robert Wentz Jr. shows a Snoopy dance,
yes.
Has anyone found the brain of Morbius yet? What does that have to do with this? Sorry? I point out the Villa Diodati has not only folded itself Castrovalla style, it folded itself through other Doctor Who stories. It's in Manhattan and London, although Codrick Hagglington is actually in Wales, surprise. It's used in Torchwood Children of Earth, it's 10 Downing Street, and Rory's dad's house in Power of Three.
Yeah, you've mentioned this.
I'm not that pedantic, I'm not going to find pics.
Yeah, right.
Maybe I will. Jeff Waddle says, I was prescribed Corgadugnilquist by my doctor, but not that doctor.
Yeah.
It's the name of the house. It's Welsh. It's,
you're all right. Yes, many, reestablish many, this, Kirby.
Too many Y's and H's.
Yeah, all right.
Too many consonants.
Robert Wentz Jr. about this episode reminded me of the God Complex. The nice thing about the BBC, they do drama and history great. There's a movie done in the 90s called A Haunted Summer about the Mary Shelley and the others, about the deal of the creation of the Frankenstein story. Remind me also of the Philip Hinchcliffe era. Yes. The Lone Cyberman looked like he was in battle. I guess they don't need info stamps. They've got liquid memory metal. Enjoyed the episode a lot. Almost up there with Prisoner of the Jadoon. 4 out of 5.
Ah, excellent.
I won't read Ian's script.
Obviously.
And Billy says, I like this one first I have for a very long time. Oh, and Reese in his reaction video,
yep.
name drops us.
Really? In what
yes.
way?
He says that he is also on a podcast occasionally.
Oh, is that it? A podcast. That's name dropping.
No,
is it?
He calls. He names us.
Oh, he does. That's all right then, isn't it? I should hope so,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, a lot of feedback.
Indeed. I'll tell you what, I do apologise to anybody watching the live feed. They see my eyelids starting to droop. I didn't get to bed until 2:30 due to work reasons and got up at 6:00 due to work reasons. So therefore, I'm flagging somewhat.
Yeah, it's already 10 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is 10 o'clock at night, yes. But I've also got a bath of Doctor Who to watch before I actually do go to bed this evening. So, yes, it's the way it goes. Anyway, right, so I better send Mary something. I think it's about time we heard her dulcet tones. reciting and orotating. That's a good word, isn't it? A particular bit of feedback from Alan D. Butcher. Don't butcher it, by the way. And while you're doing that, I can prep the next bit of audio feedback. So... Yes. Oh, actually, should we do the next bit of audio feedback first, just so Mary can digest the first paragraph?
Sure.
Here we go, then. Oh, hang on. I'm not quite there. Sorry. Right. Where's the button? Oh, there it is. Right. So this is slick, isn't it? Hang on. I've lost the... Oh, there it is. Right.
Hello, 29 Mac Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
You can never trust a Dalek. When they say something... You can't see if they have their fingers crossed. Alexa, do you like pina colada?
I do like pina coladas, but I don't like getting caught in the rain. It makes my circuit
spin.
Oh, no,
that song's going to be stuck in my head now.
The Haunting of Villa Diodati by Maxine Ogerton.
When you walk through a storm.
The Villa Diodati was owned by the Diodati family.
Yes.
The BBC always does costume dramas very well.
It does.
And I was entranced. Spellbound.
B-O-U-N-D.
I mentioned Ada Lovelace, Byron's daughter, who appeared in a previous story. Perhaps when they are on sale, the Cybermen can get a Tesla Cybertruck. Mary Shelley will later write Frankenstein. Nice name, Mary. There is continuous lightning until the lone Cyberman leaves. Then the sun shines.
At the end of a storm, there's a golden sky.
The Doctor refuses to sacrifice Percy Shelley's life. The only people to die are the two servants. Nobody important, then. The Doctor has given the lone Cyberman what he wants, which she was specifically warned not to. This story leads into the two-part finale. Chibnall has issued a statement saying the finale would be wonderful. He would say that, wouldn't he? Bye for now.
Excuse me. Thank you very much.
Master.
Ian Cut. Yes.
I tried asking my Alexa the same thing, and I didn't get that answer, even though it should have.
Well, it depends what skill you've got, inputted into it.
That should have been one of the standard jokes that they built into it.
Okay. Mary,
Echo.
Shut up, you, Kirby.
You like pina colada?
Of course. I especially like pina colada.
Anyway, Mary, please save me.
Okay, save me. From Alan T. Butcher, titled A Shot in the Sky with Lightning, or All the Lonely Cybermen, Where Do They All Come From? Dear 20 Megabiters, The Haunting of Villa Diodati is, of course, a closely studied metaphor built around the central precept, the Cyberium, which is as yet somewhat adumbrated, since the nature, purpose, and both the potential endogenous and exogenous motivations behind it are largely undiscovered. Yeah, that's true. We don't really know much about the Cyberium, do we? Therefore, although some speculative excitations in the realm of explication may be possible, the prospects of an accurate readout are minimal at best. Suffice to say that the underlying political message was no doubt ladled on and perhaps centered in the essential ambiguity found in the Cyberium's choices between the Doctor and Ashad, and in the Doctor's choices between the key dichotomy, the value of technology, alongside that of creative knowledge, illustrated respectively by the Cyberium and the prosodic corpus on Percy Bysshe Shelley.
Shut that cat up.
Sorry.
Yeah, shut up.
What is that?
It's a cat.
My cat.
Oh. Kirby's deliberately irritating to make it make a noise.
No, she just came downstairs and she's lonely.
Oh, great. Well, tell it to be lonely a bit quieter.
It should be noted that whilst some suggest that at all costs the lone Cyberman should not be given what it wants, the Doctor knew that even in the absence of a simple metric to prove it, that whether in simple appreciation of prosody and pedagogical transmission, words matter. We also learn that whilst the Eighth Doctor was nearby and at some point took Mary Shelley off for several adventures before returning her, amazingly that Mary Shelley and the others were terribly discreet about it.
Yeah.
All in all, The Haunting of Villa Diodati is a successfully creepy story packed with atmosphere and a barnstorming Cyberman to boot, or indeed to reboot the Cyberman. A capable guest cast deliver one of the most famous scenarios in literary history, and our TARDIS crew manage to entertainingly and appropriately slide themselves into it well. By hosting this introduction to the series finale in that situation, the show has managed to relate that event, which is interesting but not a dramatic story, whilst also serving a useful purpose within the series narrative. This more connected and holistic approach to the writing of this year's series is a welcome departure from last year and is very bold.
Yeah.
It is working out very well, and the danger of the relative whimper of a conclusion we had then last year seems very slim now. This story is perhaps two episodes too short, since clearly that is at least how long the implications of this stuff will need to be worked out in. Next up, Doctor Who and the Siberians Just Desserts, or Yaz and the Metal Population. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Well, I do hope there aren't any spoilers there, Alan, because some of us haven't seen it yet.
Right.
Right, let's see what's coming through on the... nothing else coming through on the video feed. Something came to mind. Oh, can I just check? Well, it's come to my attention, this thing. Actually thinking, not to do with Doctor Who, I just wanted to say it because it's I've thought of it now. There's a really weird coincidence occurred in my televisual viewing this week. I was watching, as you well know, I've watched Star Trek Voyager all the way through to the end, and I finished watching it a few weeks ago. I've got this EI, it's just rubbed my eye, and love the characters, especially. I seem to remember not particularly liking Seven of Nine until I watched it this time.
I knew
time.
You would bring this up.
Hang on. I'm not there yet, Gerby. Don't interject just yet. But I did end up liking Seven of Nine as a character by the end of the series, but as having not previously liked it. Right, then, I've now started to watch Star Trek Next Generation. I'm in Series 2. Now, one of the most memorable episodes in the whole of Star Trek Next Generation is the episode in which Data... earns legally the fact that he is sentient, so he can decide whether the Starfleet can take him away and dissect him, basically. Bruce Maddox, to be precise, who wanted to take it, as Bruce called him, away to dissect him. And then this week's Picard comes on, and not only is Bruce Maddox in that episode, but Seven of Nine is in it as well.
Yes.
A very beautiful combination, an accidental coronation of three sort of series and stories all together in one. And it was so good, the fact that I just watched an episode with Bruce Maddox, the key episode, which is more or less the crux of this particular series of Picard. So,
Master?
Fab. Well, yes?
Keep going. Finish your thought, because I have another little connection that with the whole thing.
Oh, okay. No, that was it. I just really enjoyed the fact that I watched Voyager, engaged with Seven of Nine, and we have an episode that not only has Bruce Maddox. I'd only watched it that day, and then he reappears. And the fact that obviously it's nice for me to remember the name, because I'm not sure whether Maddox appeared in any more episodes, but it was the same actor as well. It was so cool, because
yes.
That was made in 1994. That particular episode.
Wow!
So, yeah.
Yeah,
it was so cool.
You missed another connection.
Yes.
Over on the Borg cube.
Yeah.
Did you notice the Borg ex-Borg who is in charge of the whole project?
No.
That is Hugh, third of five from iBorg.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, I haven't got there yet.
It's even the same actor.
But is it the same actor that plays E-Chip in the beginning of that episode of Picard, by the way?
Yes, that's the same actor.
That's amazing, isn't it? That's very sad, but very amazing. I love it. Wow. Very dark. It's very dark, though. It's very dark, and lots of swearing in it.
I am enjoying the heck out of Star Trek Picard.
It's very dark, but very good. Because
yes.
Discovery is a dark series.
And welcome to the 20 megabyte Star Trek Picard.
I don't care. It's sci-fi. This is primarily a Doctor Who podcast, but we talk about sci-fi and stuff like that, and fantasy and things like that, because we love it. And if it's a good program, I'm going to talk about it, because I've was a Star Trek fan before as a Doctor Who fan.
Me too.
Am I going to talk about Star Trek. But yeah, fantastic television. Obviously, Patrick Stewart is... He's just one of those people that lights up the screen, whether he's on an interview program or a bit of drama, a film or whatever. A bit like Ian McKellen. It's one of those sort of, you know, iconic sort of thespian Shakespearean actors that you just want to watch. Derek Jacobi is another one. And it's just great. It's lovely seeing these amazingly good, powerful character actors performing. And there's another young chap who plays a Romulan, who's a bit of a Romulan spy who's trying to get in with Data's daughter. I can't remember. He's a British actor, and he's going to Wales Comic Con. And he's not particularly expensive, because not a lot of people know him in this country. Although he was in The Crown, he did play... who did he play in The Crown? He played Roddy Llewellyn, Princess Margaret's bit on the side in The Crown. So, yeah, and that was in the last episode of The Crown as well. So, fantastic stuff on the telly, yes. And, of course, what the Stranger Things Series 4 trailer went out as well in that particular time. So, it was awesome. Oh, Lock and Key, that's really good. I'm a bit behind, need to catch up with that one. Sorry,
my,
Kirby.
My Fred has watched Lock and Key, and she says that the girl in it is irritating. I haven't watched Lock and Key yet.
I haven't watched
she's,
it yet.
Because she's put the key in to take away her fear, isn't she? So she's changed the personality.
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, but, shut up. Sorry.
With Picard, I managed to convince the geek daughter, Julia. She and I are watching it together.
Yep.
And this is the first time she's watched Star Trek in a while, and she's totally hooked.
Yeah,
as
it's
well,
good. It is good.
She is getting very irritated at me. I've had to really shush myself. Like you, I was a Star Trek fan before I was a Doctor Who fan. And as I see little things come through, I'm seeing Easter eggs everywhere in the Picard stories. And I just... She keeps having to shush me because I keep going...
Well, it's good because although they're Easter eggs, it doesn't detract from the story. And it's good because there's lots of them coming up and lots of them been gone. But the Bruce Maddox one's a particularly exciting one because I knew who the character was having just watched that particular story. So it was great. You know.
What episode is the most recent one you've seen?
What, Next Gen?
No. Of Picard.
The one with Bruce Maddox and Seven of Nine. That one.
Is that the third episode?
Fourth, I think. Is it or fifth?
I think it might be fifth.
It's episode five.
Up to five. I only have them up to three.
Episode five. But yeah, it's good stuff. Right, so that's... I think we've actually done Doctor Who, haven't we? The thing that... hang on. Right, I'm sure I was going to say something about Fantasy Con, actually. I was going to say something.
Yeah.
Wales Comic Con. Wales Comic Con. Before I move on to Fantasy Con, Wales Comic Con. And I said about this chap who plays the Romulan spy person in that's sleeping with Data's daughter in Picard. Another person going to Wales Comic Con is a chap called Peter Davison. And I've never met him, so I'm quite excited about that. So I'm waiting for his photo ops become available, and we'll be hopefully getting a photo op on the Saturday and getting an autograph on the Sunday. So I'm going to get him to sign the picture of him with me. So that's really exciting.
That still boggles me that I met a doctor before you met a doctor.
Oh, yes. Well, don't worry about that.
I had breakfast with Peter Davison, and we had a nice, long, and very vigorous conversation.
Very vigorous? Oh, conversation. Right.
Yeah.
So?
Much nicer than just standing next to him.
I met John Pertwee before you did, and we had a very long and vigorous talk about Wurzel Gummidge. Right then.
We had a nice discussion with Peter Davison on the podcast, remember?
Well, a very brief one. Alan C. Butcher says, definitely no spoilers for the ascension of the Cybermen in my feedback, excepted that the least one of the Doctor's companions are in it and the Cybermen are in it. Okay. Thank you for that, Alan. I've got an issue next. Oh, yeah, so Fantasy
Con. By the way, John Davey finally got a credit in the episode for being a Cyberman.
Did he? What, the one we just wrote?
He normally, when he's inside these monster outfits, doesn't get a credit at the end, but he got a credit this time.
He
was the lone Cyberman?
No.
All right, never mind.
In Ascension. He posted it almost immediately after Ascension was finished.
Okay. I'll keep on getting... this is for FantasyCon. Before I've got an exclusive announcement. I hope I'm allowed to exclusive announce it, but not officially yet, because might be a few days before I officially announce it. But I keep on getting these messages coming through from people who say, I want to come to your event. And I have to say, well, no, we haven't got enough space for any more guests. And we're sort of leaning towards asking lead actors to come, recognised lead actors, rather than extras who on their IMDb page just says they've been in lots of stuff, but it says uncredited, which is interesting itself to a degree. But if I'm going, so I'm going to Wales Comic Con, knowing they're going to have people like Peter Davison. Last year we had Matt Smith, David Tennant. That's what's taken me from here to travelling 200 miles, is because I've got a chance of meeting these people. I'm thinking that's what people are thinking if they're going to come to our event, to a degree, anyway. So I haven't got capacity for anybody other than people I've got in the pipeline. So the ones I've got in the pipeline, if they come through, they'll be coming. If they don't, I'll replace them with somebody of a similar ilk. So the an exclusive announcement of a guest, which I haven't got had time to sort out the paperwork with. A chap, Fraser Hines. I don't know if you heard of him. He played a character called Jamie McCrimmon in Doctor Who during the Second Doctor's era, and also popped up during the Sixth Doctor's era and the Fifth Doctor's era, playing a chap called Jamie McCrimmon. She was also in a British soap opera called Emmerdale as well for many years. Actually, it was called Emmerdale Farmers even when he was in it. So that's it. Fraser Hines will be coming to FantasyCon this year. But I haven't had time to do the official stuff yet, but he's put it in his diary, so that's good enough for me. Okay, fine. Right,
yes,
then. So,
great.
But yeah, so you guys, you listeners to this show, know that before most other people. So because, like I say, I'm so busy, I haven't got time to do all the faffing that's needed to do the graphic and post it properly. But isn't it exciting that you lot know it? And most people who don't listen to this show, that are maybe going to FantasyCon, don't know that. And the other thing that's been annoying me in regards to FantasyCon is that there's some people who are a bit jealous of the event, who are trying to send out rumours that we haven't got any money and therefore the event won't happen. Well, we didn't have any money last year and it happened, and we're actually better off this year than we were last year. So what do you think is going to happen? It's going to happen. It's so ridiculous. Oh, God, people are so annoying.
That is ridiculous.
It is. I've got an itchy back. The very issue with these elder wands. If you want something that can double as a back scratcher, get an elder wand. I'll just whack my microphone with it. Right then. So
I was actually looking at buying one earlier today.
An elder wand or a back scratcher? Pardon? Huh? An elder wand or a back scratcher?
An elder wand.
Yeah. Right, so I'm also viewers to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast via the live feed on Facebook. I wonder why I've got Where's Wally stuff down my...
Yeah, I was wondering why Wally was hanging on the front of your shirt there.
The reason being, this particular Wally has got FantasyCon written on its front and back, which really annoyed Deb, because she said, you've now defaced it, it's not worth anything. Well, I've got another one behind me in its box, so that's the one that... I'll be keeping, but this one here is going to be used for a treasure hunt, so we're going to put it somewhere on the island where people can get free tickets for FantasyCon if they find it and bring it back to our friends at Heroes who sell pop vinyls. So that's what we're going to do. It will be posted somewhere, maybe in a shop window on the Isle of Wight, and anybody sees it, takes it back to Heroes, gets a free ticket to FantasyCon at some point. Yes,
Always amused by the fact that here in the States that's Waldo.
That's what it says on the box. Yes, you're right. I'll show you the box. Watch.
Oh, you mean it says Waldo on the box?
Yes, it does. Look, where's Waldo?
Oh.
But in my view, it's Wally.
Yeah.
Yeah, there he is. It's the back of the box. I've been waiting for this pop to come out for a while, actually. I thought it was quite a cool and unusual one. And I still think it's a cool and unusual one. But there's a really funny Big Bang Theory episode in which they play lots of games, and one of them is where find Waldo and whatever, Wally. So that's it then. I'm not going to talk about sponsors because they're great. I haven't got time. What else can we not talk about?
You mean whowon.co.uk?
Yeah, and lavazi.co.uk. I'm not going to go into great detail, but they're great. But I do want to talk about Doctor Who news. It says, hang on, my scroller's stopped scrolling. Isn't that annoying, Mary? When you want to look at something, it's completely stopped. I'm going to get the spinning disc of something coming up in a minute.
Spinning disc of doom.
Well, it's not so much of this disc of doom, it's the spinning disc of hang on, I'm busy. So which rather stops my... now it's doing something. Right, I'm back again. Okay, so what we got here, we've got an itchy nose, which I'm just going to scratch. The Doctor Who Companion, the 12th Doctor, Volume 3, is the Doctor Who magazine, is continuing its in-depth chronicle of the show's production with an 116-page volume dedication to four memorable episodes of Series 8 and the subsequent festive special, all starring Peter Capaldi as the Doctor and Jenna Coleman as Clara. So there we go. Doctor Who Bear, Build-A-Bear Workshop and BBC Studios have launched a Doctor Who range, launching a Doctor Who Bear and accessories inspired by the TV series. The Doctor Who Bear features branded blue paw pads and blue heart on its chest. The Time Lord's look is completed with the iconic 13th Doctor or 10th Doctor outfits. Sport the striped top and braces worn by the 13th Doctor, or the suit, trousers, glasses and trainers worn by the 10th Doctor. Each bear will arrive with sonic screwdriver and its own TARDIS gift box. The new range is available in the UK and can be bought exclusively online at bearbill.co.uk. The range will be launching online in the US later this month. Doctor Who Bear is available online now for £21.50 with outfits and accessories starting at £8. Oh my God.
I like that.
I do like the tenant bear because it's got its like 3D glasses and stuff that's quite cool, and it's sort of like, oh, blimey, something just gone down our road.
I wish that we could get this one at our Build of Bears.
I just wish they'd do the 11th Doctor in Build-A-Bear, to be fair. Well, I mean, and 12th.
I'd like them to do a 4th Doctor in Build-A-Bear.
Yeah, actually, they should do all of them.
Yeah, you think the 4th Doctor would be the first one they'd put out.
But the funny thing is, I'm looking at the pictures, the 13th Doctor Bear's got a hood and hood pulled up with its ears poking through the hood. They are cool, to be fair. I think they're great. I don't know whether to get one for £21.50 or not, but because obviously not going to be around for very long, so they could become collector's items. I'm not a bear person.
Oddly, my girls never got into Build-A-Bear.
They didn't?
I don't know why.
I don't want my microphones. My microphone has fallen backwards, so you probably know. I don't know how long it's been tilting upwards, but I don't know if anybody can hear me now on the show.
Well, we've been able to hear you, so therefore...
that's irrelevant, because this isn't... Oh, never mind. Right then, so what we got here... yes?
Master?
Yes?
I just wanted to let people know, I've made two interesting Doctor Who purchases Amazon lately.
Oh, yes?
People kind of know that I acquire my Who... differently at first, and then I buy them later.
Yes.
Let's put it that way. Anyway, Amazon, yeah. I just got from Amazon the complete David Tennant collection, everything from his, including the specials and everything together, in a Blu-ray collection from Amazon in the U.S. for $14.99.
That's a bargain.
Wow, that is a bargain.
Yeah.
Alexa. How much is $14?
Huh?
Shush.
$14 is £10.80.
Wow.
And it's pretty much as soon as we're finished recording, stuff like this I have delivered to an Amazon locker rather than to the door, so they're not porch pirated. Down at the Amazon locker, a couple miles away from here, I have waiting for me Doctor Who, the Matt Smith collection, including the 50th anniversary special. Yeah. This is unfortunately DVD, not Blu-ray.
Oh, okay.
$14.99.
Wow.
Alexa, how much is $14.99?
14 Canadian dollars.
Canadian? What Canadian, you stupid twit? Good grief. Why would it be Canadian? When have I ever asked for Canadian dollars? Right then. Can you hear me? Official. Oi, I'm talking. Yes. I've lost one. Can you hear me? Official ratings. 4.9 million viewers, according to the figures released by Broadcasting Research Audience Board. The episode is the first one to dip below 5 million since Peter Capaldi's story, Eaters of Light, in 2017. The ratings make the episode...
in imminent danger of being cancelled.
Shut up. Episode makes it the 35th most watched programme across all television channels. It had 21.6% share of the total TV audience, and it slipped behind its opposition on ITV, Dancing on Ice. And then the Haunting of Villa Diodati... overnight figures were 3.86 million viewers, and it says 19.7% of the total viewing audience, and it was seventh most popular show on British television, and it was beaten, however, by Dancing on Ice, God knows why. And of course we had Storm Dennis hit us that week as well, so might have kept people in to watch it. The official ratings for Praxeus were 5.22 million viewers. So there you go. It's a bit up and down with the old viewing. And then my light has just gone off. Alexa, front room light on. It automatically goes off at 10:30. It's set to switch the light on at 8:30 and then switch it off at 10:30. Just as when we're out, it makes it look like we're in. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway... So that's Doctor Who news.
Pardon? Okay.
Alan T. Butcher says, Fraser Hines, yes, he is a big one, isn't he? Really? I would travel 50 miles to say hello to him.
Well, he is very interesting.
I've met him, well, briefly.
And we had him on the podcast, briefly.
Yes, he phoned me up when I was just about to have my Sunday lunch many years ago. Yes, and he came on the show... via the old telephone method. Yes, that seems quite a nice chap. And so he's going to be coming. There will be more announcements, but not many. I've got a couple of sort of irons in the fire, but I'm trying to get everything in place before we actually have to embark on the wedding season. I did forget to mention, obviously, that we have a Star Wars zone, which the 51st Legion Isle of Wight Garrison will be attending again. Obviously, along with our Star Wars guests, we also have a VR and gaming company who are going to come down and set up PlayStations and VR gaming, which is going to be quite exciting. That hasn't officially been announced yet, but is happening because I've paid the deposit. And of course, Lord of Time is happening, and Roy has got the Deb had the idea, but Roy's going to try and implement this scare corridor thing. Because it's on a Halloween, so there's lots of things in the pipeline for FantasyCon 2. Right, so there you go.
I just posted links for anyone who wants to get those DVD Blu-ray collections.
That's fine. You posted links. What was that? A picture of a Sontaran that was in Doctor Who?
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
Or was it a picture of a can of deodorant that might be quite nice? Right then, so next week will be the same thing. Yes, I am filming a show at Ladina Theatre, and therefore it will delay the podcast. So we'll probably have to be doing it at the same time.
That's fine by me.
I apologise. But I'm hoping by the time we get to the final episode of the series that I'll be back on track again. But it's just where it goes sometimes. You know?
Oh, no, this means that... only two more weeks and there's no more new Doctor Who.
And I forgot to mention that Michael Sheen is going to Wales Comic Con. Did I mention that last week?
I think so.
Freema Agyeman is going to Wales Comic Con as well. Yeah, I haven't met her before, so that'd be quite nice. So yeah, lots of exciting things happening on the convention front. So I'm going to go and get a bath and hope I've got enough consciousness left in me to watch Doctor Who, and then I'm going to go to bed.
Don't fall asleep in the bath.
No,
I'm going to go get my Matt Smith collection.
You say about falling asleep in the bath. I'm currently watching Forensic Files on a sort of on a loop, really. I discovered while watching that program, and it is actually impossible to drown in the bath by falling asleep. it's also impossible to drown in the toilet. So there you go, because of certain things. Because the way you are, you can drown. I think no, you can't drown in the bath because of the overflow. A baby can drown in a bath, but an adult.
Right. You can't slip down far enough without lifting your legs up in the air.
Not even if you sort of are so drunk, and I don't know how Whitney Houston managed to do it, but it is impossible to drown in the bath. So you go. Anyway,
well, I doubt she had a standard size tub.
No, that's right. Probably a great big round swimming pool tub.
Welcome to the 20 MB drowning in a bathtub podcast.
So anyway, until next week, slightly later than usual, thank you for supporting and continue to listen and join in the show, and please continue to do so. That rhymes. Goodbye.
Goodbye, bye, fancy bye. Pants.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.